This afternoon, you will be hearing Alan Wood speaking on the events in May 1968, events that took place 40 years ago, which we would argue was a revolution in the making, and you'll see how that evolved in France. But 1968 wasn't just France, it was actually a worldwide phenomenon. 1968, there's the Mexican 1968, there is where they actually massacred students. I was reading it up because we want to publish something on it, and it's quite interesting to see. It's got nothing to do with Italy or France, but there's a lot of talk about boycotting China because of what's happening in Tibet. In 1968, nobody raised the idea of boycotting Mexico because a few weeks earlier they'd massacred dozens of students who were protesting. It shows you they have double standards. Mexico is a friend of the United States, was a regime in which America was making big profits, and therefore they prefer to sweep that kind of stuff under the carpet. As China is a major competitor, then the values change, obviously. But you had 68 in Mexico, you had the 68 in Pakistan, which created the Pakistan People's Party. You had upheavals in Eastern Europe, particularly in Czechoslovakia. The whole world really was in turmoil in that period. Everywhere, even in Britain, it came a little bit later with 1971, but you had massive movements of the working class in Britain against the Industrial Relations Act, which was an attempt to limit trade union rights. And you know, at the time I was a little boy, but I remember my dad going out on strike, proudly showing that he was standing behind the Transport and General Workers Union banner in Coventry, which with 10,000 people on a rally, which is unheard of. A town like that. So it even affected Britain. It radicalised the students, it radicalised the workers. You had the civil rights movement in Ireland. It was everywhere. And there was the Vietnam War. It was the culmination of a process which had been developing over some years. May 68 in France is really probably the most powerful movement, and it's the closest the workers got in a particular moment to taking power. And de Gaulle actually at one point declared that that's it, we've lost it. He was so surprised and shocked by what was happening. But Alan will deal with that later on. But it had an effect around Europe, and Italy was affected. It wasn't just because of France. There were similar things developing. Now, in Italy, you had a radicalisation of the students in that period, but in 1969, you had what has gone down in history as the Hot Autumn. Nothing to do with climate change. But it was hot in another way. And it was a huge radicalisation and mobilisation of the Italian working class, which actually, as opposed to France, in France what you had was a very sharp, sudden struggle that lasted a few weeks, which could either have gone one way or another. Because of the leadership, it was defeated, and de Gaulle was able to turn the situation completely round and rally the forces of reaction and actually win the elections. In Italy, 1969 opened up a decade of unprecedented struggles and a period so long in time in terms of enormously favourable balance of forces for the working class. But it wasn't just a sudden shot out of the blue. It was the development of a whole period of history. And I want to give a little bit of background. And what I hope to do is to give the feel of how history moves over a period and how events like 68 and 69 aren't sudden developments, unexpected or exceptional or whatever. They are part of a longer historical process. Now, in Italy you had fascism, which I'm not going to go into the history of that, it'd be too long, but it collapsed on the 25th of April 1945 when the last city, Milan, was taken by the partisans marching into the city. In a very short period of time, the CGIL, which was the old official trade union, it was like the TUC in Britain, which had been underground and completely smashed, in 1945 suddenly became an organisation of 5 million members. The Communist Party, which in 1935 had 2,000 members, half of them were in prison or internal exile, and the others were, some of them were in underground, and a lot were in exile outside Italy. 10 years later, in 1945, the Communist Party has 2 million members. The Socialist Party, which was the smaller of the two left parties in 1945, had 800,000 members. If you add the youth members of the Socialist Party and the Communist Party, what you're saying is there are 3 million Italian workers and youth who in 1 year joined the Communist Party and the Socialist Party. It was a massive reawakening of the Italian working class. And it gives you an idea of the strength of the labour movement. Now, I don't want to go into the details because of time, but precisely at a moment when the working class of Italy could have taken power, remember that there was also the partisan army of 300,000 armed partisans who struggled in the underground against the Nazis and the occupation. You know, there's a lot of jokes about Italians, you know, tanks and how many gears they've got. I don't particularly like them because it ignores this side of Italian history. The Italian soldiers were surrendering en masse because they didn't want to fight for Mussolini, but 300,000 were armed and fighting to expel the Nazis, and many of them were killed. I was in Italy last week and at a conference, and outside the building, like, and Bologna has got lots of these, there's a plaque. The name of a young man died in 1944. He was 17 years old. He was shot by the Nazis on that spot. And if you go around many of the northern cities, this is a working class neighborhood, you see lots of these plaques. A lot of these young workers and peasants who fought bravely and gave their lives. But the Communist Party, Stalinist, applying the policies of Stalin, etc., which were that Europe was to be divided into two, a Russian sphere of influence and an American. In the West, the Communist parties, instead of did the opposite of what they did in the East of Europe, they entered into coalition governments, like in France and in Italy. In Italy, it was with the Christian Democrats. Between 1944 and 1947, there was an alliance and a government between the Communist Party, Socialist Party, and the Christian Democracy and other forces. It was a government which actually saved capitalism from the revolutionary threat they were facing in 1945 to 47. I'll just give you an example. Almirante, who died a few years ago, he was the founder of the MSI, which was the reformed fascist party after the Second World War. He was in hiding because if the partisans had got him, I don't know how he would have ended up. It was the Minister of Justice who gave a blanket amnesty to all fascists that saved him. The Minister of Justice was the General Secretary of the Italian Communist Party, Togliatti. They collaborated with the Christian Democrats, applied a policy which is not what the workers were looking for. The result was that in 1948, in the elections, the left, the Socialist Party and the Communist Party, lost hugely in the elections. It marked a turning point and the beginning of a much more difficult position for the working class. The capitalists turned on the working class after having had to sort of survive a period of revolutionary upsurge. And I'll just give you some figures. Between 1948 and 1950, 62 workers were killed by the police in different strikes and clashes. 3,126 were wounded. 92,000 were arrested, of which nearly 20,000 were sentenced to prison. This is in a democracy. This is in parliamentary democracy with democratic rights and all the rest of it. It was a crushing of the working class after the defeat of 48, which also prepared the ground for the economic boom, because there was intensification of exploitation of the working class. There was the world economic boom, and then in the 50s you had what they called the Italian miracle, where Italian industry developed massively from having been a relatively backward agricultural country. In the defeat of the working class, you see the bosses tried to smash the labour movement. They split the trade unions into three. They manoeuvred inside between the different political factions. The CGIL, which was one unified union, it's like the TUC in Britain, split into three confederations. One dominated by the Communists and Socialists, one dominated by the Christian Democracy, and a smaller one, a smaller party. In the factories, in the period 43-48, there'd been an upsurge of workers' democracy. The election committees, democratically elected by the workers in the factories. After 48, in the fact that there was a process of clamping down on the factory committees, and a systematic attack on the CGIL, the left, the biggest and the most left-wing of the three unions. For example, in Fiat, they set up special departments where they would put all the militants, all the left-wing militants, all the people who were creating trouble, into one department and isolate them from the rest of the factory. And in the same factory, the Fiat plant in Turin, between 48 and 53, 164 political sackings took place, i.e. the sacking of key shop stewards, militants, activists, etc. Unfortunately, again, we see that the role of the union leaders, who actually cooperated in imposing this policy of so-called sacrifices. Di Vittorio, who was the general secretary of the CGIL in 1949, actually said the workers will be happy to make sacrifices, exactly when the workers were moving in the opposite direction. But as opposed to what we've seen in later periods, the Italian capitalists weren't interested even in collaborating with these trade union leaders. They didn't have to. The trade union leaders and the Communist Party had contributed to defeating the working class, smashing the movement of the 40s, and they didn't have time to sit down and collaborate. They just went straight for the jugular of the whole of the trade union movement. And you can see the effect it had. There's a lot of things here, actually, which can be applied to other countries and draw lessons from. The effects of the defeat. As I said, in 1945, the CGIL had 5 million workers. By the end of the 50s, this had been reduced to 2.5 million. So there'd been a massive fall in trade union membership. Today we're told that the trade unions are losing members and therefore it's the end of class struggle and all the rest of it. As you know, that there was a hot autumn later, so obviously it wasn't true. Another example, the political strength. This gives you an idea of the strength of the Communist Party. At Fiat in Turin, there was a workforce of 16,000. In 1946. Of these, 7,000 were members of the Communist Party. That normally would be the figure of a trade union membership. This was the membership of the Communist Party. By 1950, 4 years later, with a workforce of 22,000, it was growing on the basis of the expanding economy, they only had 4,500 members. But it gives you an indication of what was happening. Trade unions membership was going down, political activity was going down. And nationally, the Communist Party in 1946 had over 2 million members, of which 53% were industrial workers. That means there was over 1 million industrial workers who were members of the Communist Party. In 1960, membership of the Communist Party had gone down to 1,800,000. We're in Italy, this is not Britain. In Britain, the Labour Party would love to see it figured with 1,800,000. But significantly, of that declined number, only 37% were industrial workers. It shows you that where the conflict was at its most bitter in the industrial areas in the factories, that's where the pressure was biggest and there was a pressure to abandon the party, etc. A lot of workers would face the option of either leaving the party or losing their jobs. And the particular effect it had on the youth, the Young Communist League, in 1951, still had close to 450,000 members, nearly 500,000. By 63, it had gone down to 174,000. Now, what this shows is what was happening. That generation, which had been awoken to political and trade union struggle in the process of the struggle against the Nazis and the struggles after the war, there was a massive increase, in membership of the unions and the left, etc. That generation suffered defeat and partial demoralisation. Subsequently, there was a lull in the movement, and there weren't young people weren't joining the Communist Party and the trade unions. Again, today you probably say a lot worse, but you say people are not joining the Labour Party or they're not joining the Communist Party in Italy or whatever, because there were no struggles. People tend to join these organisations when there's a reason, and there was falling levels of strikes, falling levels of trade union activity. The bosses systematically used the division in the union. They played off one union against the other. The three main unions were pitted against each other. And they used a tactic also of making deals with one of these unions, the more moderate union, the Christian Union, and isolate the CGIL, which was seen as the communist union. And there was immense pressure put on the working class as a result. The working class was in retreat, you could say. Just to give you some figures, between 1948 and 55, industrial production grew by 95%, almost 100%. There was almost a doubling in the level of industrial production. The working hours worked by workers increased by 6%, so they were getting workers to work longer hours. Productivity increased by 90%, so they were getting almost double the amount of production out of each worker. Profits, as a consequence in this period, grew by 86%, but real wages only grew by 6%. It shows you what was happening. They were squeezing the Italian working class, squeezing every last drop of profit out of them. In this process, there was the industrialization of Italy, the Italian miracle of the 50s, which meant that there was a proletarianization of society. At the end of the Second World War, half of the Italian population was still working in agriculture. They would be mainly peasants. In the 50s, this started to change. There was a massive movement of millions of peasants into the northern cities. Wages in the south of Italy were half what they were in the north. And during the post-war boom, 11 million people moved from the south of Italy to the north, expanding the cities and going into the factories. This had the effect of strengthening the working class. This working class began to grow in numbers. And this, you can see, it starts to affect the situation in the factories towards the end of the 50s. For example, the CISL, the CISL, which is the Christian Union, supposedly the moderate union, was growing as well as the Communist Union, and by the end of the 50s, it was being pushed to the left. Those young workers, those young southern peasants who had come into the factories and joining this union because it seemed the safer option, it was safer to be in a Christian union than to be in the communist one, in these conditions of immense pressure at work, were beginning to demand that a union should do something. And by 1958, even the Christian Union was beginning to take a militant stance. And it was really a taste of what was to come. Now, there was a massive boom in the 50s and up to the early 60s. Between 51 and 58, there was over 5% growth a year. And in 58 to 63, which was probably the fastest period of growth, it was over 6% a year. Manufacturing industry, which is an important element to understand the development of the working class, in the same period, 59 to 63, grew by more than 10% a year. What this meant was there was a huge expansion, building of new factories, expanding of the factories, taking on millions of industrial workers. The industrial working class, as a consequence, went from about 3.5 million at the beginning of the 50s to close to 5 million industrial workers, that is actually factory workers, you know, working the machines, in 1961. The boom was increasing the numbers of the working class, but also reducing the number of unemployed. In 1959, unemployment was 7%. By 63, it was less than 4%, the lowest it had ever been. To give you an idea, Turin, which was really the heart of the Italian industrial working class and still is, in 1951, its population was just over 700,000. In 67, we're talking about 16 years later, it was 1,120,000. There was a massive increase in the population, all of them mainly southern workers. I just watched a DVD I bought last week in Italy. In December, seven workers were burnt alive in a factory called ThyssenKrupp, a German-owned factory. And I've got the DVD, interviews the families, the workers who survived, and everything that happened to them. It's a tragic thing, and it happened just a few months ago. What struck me was listening to all the workers, the families, the mothers, the sisters, the brothers. They were all southern Italians. These are poor people from the south who have gone and concentrated in the cities of the north. I was watching that, and it reminded me of this period. It's the same thing that's happening. It's actually started again, this phenomenon. So you have the northern cities absorbing millions of workers in cramped conditions. There wasn't enough housing. You hear some situations where there were like dozens of people living in the same flat. Insufficient infrastructure. So you had pressure in the workplace, terrible conditions in the working class neighborhoods, and this immense pressure on the working class to speed up production, increase productivity, etc. by the end of the 50s, you start to see what is going to come 10 years later in 1969. In 1959, that year alone, the level of strikes in that year was double the average number of strikes of the period 50 to 58. There was and think about it. It is the peak of the boom, and it is in the peak of the boom that we have this massive explosion of strikes at the end of the 50s. The workers were beginning to feel their own power, their own strength. They'd tolerated for over a decade all these attacks, and they were reaching the limit of what they could take. At the same time, they sensed unemployment is falling, jobs are increasing, there's a demand for production. This is the moment to come out and demand our rights, because if you strike in a moment like this, obviously the strike is going to have a much bigger effect than if you strike when, I don't know, when a factory is about to close and there's no market for the goods. You can go on strike and the boss will say, thank you very much. You can stay out for 2 months if you want. I don't have to pay you. And workers do understand that. That's why I think sometimes you get on the left this sort of mechanical idea. Recession means class struggle. Boom means calm in the class struggle. It's not quite like that. The relationship of forces depends. If in a factory you have 1,000 workers, 500 have just been sacked, and there's not much work left, the other 500 are not really in a very strong position to take on the boss. But if after a period of immense pressure, the 500 become 600, 700, and the boss starts to ask for overtime, that's when the workers start to think this is the time to strike and get back what we've lost. The workers started to demand at the end of the 50s a shorter working week, wage increases, a slowing down of the pace of production, and a major say also in decisions about how the factory is run. And in that period, a new generation of workers began to join the trade unions. The Christian Union was pushed to the left. The CGIL, which had been isolated and oppressed in the factories, started to make ground again and started to win elections in the factory committees. Now, the initial response of the Italian capitalists, having been able to completely ride roughshod over the working class for over a decade, you know, since 1948, really, they've been able to crush the workers. They didn't fully understand where this was going, and they thought it would simply be enough to clamp down, move to the right, and increase repression. In 1960, what they tried to do was shift the balance of forces in Parliament and include the Fascist Party in a coalition. They called the MSI in to collaborate with the government. They got the surprise of their life. The MSI in 1960, which was the leftovers of the old Fascist Party, called its Congress in Genoa in 1960. And as a provocation, Genoa was one of the major centres of the partisan movement that defeated the Nazis, with a strong left-wing tradition. As a provocation, they invited a general to attend that Congress, a general who had tortured and killed the partisans and workers under fascism. He was seen as a butcher. The reaction of the working class was amazing. On the 30th of June 1960, thousands of workers come out on the streets. A lot of the old partisans went and dug out their guns. When there was disarmament to the partisans, a lot of them didn't hand their guns in. Actually, in the 70s, they actually discovered in some of the factories, like in Milan in the Pirelli, under some of the machines, they found the machine guns which had been hidden. Some had been dismantled and put in oil. They thought these might be useful one day. And in 1960, they were pulling them out again, and they took over the city, and that put an end to the attempt to lean on the fascists. I mean, the police were ordered to open fire on the protesters in 1960. Workers were killed in Sicily. They were killed in Reggio Emilia. There's actually a famous song, which is now sung in Italy, the dead of Reggio Emilia, morti di Reggio Emilia, which dates to that to those events. The union, the CGIL, under pressure, workers are being killed on the streets. The fascists are provoking. They're trying to shift the government to the right. The CGIL was forced to call a national general strike, which was very successful. The clashes continued. The police shot at workers in Palermo and Catania in Sicily, and this enraged the working class more and more, and it was so powerful, the movement of the working class, that the government had to resign. And this was a clear indication that the working class had recovered from the defeat of 1948, and it was a class with a renewed confidence in itself, and it was moving forward. A foretaste of what we saw in 1969 took place in 1962. Young workers, this new generation of young workers who were joining the unions, there was one of the unions, the WIL, one of the more moderate ones, had signed a rotten agreement. The young workers just went to the main square where that union was based, and they just went crazy. They attacked the building. There were conflicts with the police. The trade union leaders called them thugs, and they were actually the new generation of the working class, which was beginning to rise.